In the morning, we divided, some in the shallop and some along the shore. I was with the group to stay on land. So was Dottie. We found the great black thing the Indians had been working on. It was, said Captain Standish, a grampus. Tom, it was 15 feet long. Never have I seen such. Its back was black, its underbelly white. Elder Bradford said it contained valuable oils which we could use had we the time and tools to harvest it. We went on following Indian tracks. Very soon we came to a large piece of ground with sand mounds and fences around it. Fences, these savages fenced in their graveyards. We will dig nothing here, Elder Bradford announced. He was given no argument. Were these victims of the plague? Any air of despair hung over everything. Such silence. So many graves. Would we come to the same end in this place? I know the question, not at all. Again we went on, this time coming to some deserted wigwams. We stayed here the afternoon searching but found nothing. A town without people. How eerie. We then walked along the beach to meet up with the shallop. There we had to chop more wood for a barricade. For the night, nothing to eat but biscuits and salt meat. Daughter and Lester grumbled. Mr. Hopkins told them to hold still the tongues in their head, or next time they would stay in the ship's hold. I was one of the last to sleep, and was sitting by the fire writing when the sentry cried to arms, to arms. I jumped up and nearly spilled my ink. The men were lining the walls of the barricade with the muskets at ready. I know I could learn to shoot. "'Tis but the howling wolves," said a seaman from the shallop, so all finally went to sleep, myself included, though it seemed but a blink of time before they were waking me. We woke in the dark. They were making breakfast of such victuals as we had. Then some started carrying their muskets and armor to the shallop. Captain Standish advised against this. "Do not leave yourselves unprotected," he said, but they continued doing so. We were sitting to plan our day when we heard a horrible cry from the woods. "Wolch! Wolch! Ha! Ha! Wolch!" It came from all sides. It echoed. We were surrounded by it. Captain Standish immediately fired his gun, as did another man. How the sound echoed across the water. The other men dashed for the shallop to get their guns, but before we knew it, an Indian stood behind a tree. Then others ran out onto the beach, sealing them off. Savages, Tom, with paint on their faces, tall and fearless, with scarce any clothing against the biting cold. Earrings they wore, and their long hanging necklaces made of shells. There on the beach, they planted their feet firm in the sand and stood their ground. Never have I seen such beautiful warriors, though once saw the king's soldiers in London. There was an air about them of simple cleanness, of straight truth. Does that sound silly? If you saw them, you would say no. Here's something new, I thought, yet something as old as time. Very soon, however, Captain Standish fired at them. I wanted to yell, "No, no, don't kill them. We need them." God be praised, the captain missed. The savages fled, quick as deer. They all fled, quick as they had come. We stood alone on the beach in the whipping wind, wondering if we dreamed them. Mayhap we are dreaming now. Mayhap we will wake up of a sudden and find ourselves back on the streets of Holland. We looked to the forest then, and by the fickle light of morning saw them there in the woods, running back and forth. All were for leaving then, but Captain Standish said, "No, no, we must show them we are not to be dallied with. Who will come with me into the woods?" Several men went, while the rest of us waited. Had I a gun, I would have gone. We heard them there in the forest shouting and shooting off their muskets. While this was going on, Elder Bradford bade me help him pick their arrows from the wood of our barricade. Altogether, we found 18. Some had arrowheads of brass, some of horn. Others were made of claws of eagles. Elder Bradford said, "Yes, I might keep one. I can't wait to show it to you, Tom." We knew how blessed we were, so we set off in the shallop, much thankful. As soon as we pushed off, the weather turned foul again, and by mid-afternoon, we had a regular gale. The rudder of the ship had broke, and two of the men did all they could to steer her. "Press on," Chopin yelled. "I see the harbor. The flood tide swept us along. I hung on for dear life. The mast broke in three places. The wind was so wild we could not speak to one another." Chopin gestured, pointing as the shallop rode the waves into a cove. "I have seen this place before," Chopin yelled. "God guide us to a safe place," Elder Bradford prayed. We went ashore. But where were we? Were there savages waiting to kill us? Some wanted to stay the night in the shallop, but First Mate Clark jumped out. "I don't care if I'm killed," he said. "I must needs make a fire." Others followed and soon had a fire started. It was so dark, we didn't know where we were or if we would be killed that night by savages. With the morning light, Mate Chopin looked around him and said, "Yes, this is the harbor," he recalled. "We were on an island, and the men named it Clark's Island for the chief mate, who was brave enough to be the first to step ashore last night. I wished we could explore, but Elder Bradford said that God had given us a sweet day, and we would rest and clean the muskets and give God thanks for his mercies. Some said that the Sabbath was the morrow. There are enough mercies for two nights' rest and thanks," Bradford said. "So we didn't get to explore until Monday. A sad and happy day. The sailors shone down on our beautiful place. The sailors put a mast on the shallop, and we sailed across the harbor. The water sparkled. The sun had warmth. Going ashore, we found running brooks, good earth, trees aplenty, and with a good harbor, this was declared the place where we would want. Where we would build our homes. All were so eager to impart the news that it was decided to sail right across the harbor instead of hugging the shoreline. 25 miles in open water. But the wind was kind and the sun warm. So by late afternoon we were back to the Mayflower. As we scrambled aboard, the married men could scarce wait to see their families and tell the news. On the deck they awaited us in a quiet group. The wives came forward to greet their husbands. "We have found our home," Elder Bradford announced. "We have decided to call the harbor Plymouth, as from the place where we started our journey." All wanted to hear of the place, and we told each of us what we had seen. Of course, Edward Dotty made it sound as if he'd frightened off the Indians all on his own. Then, of a sudden, in the midst of all the talking, Elder Bradford looked around. "Where is my wife?" he asked. "Where is Dorothy?" The talk stopped. Everyone just stood and stared. All we could hear for the moment was the cry of a gull swooping over the ship. Then Captain Jones stepped forward. "Good man," he said, "it pleased God to take your wife this day. She fell into the water and drowned." Elder Bradford wept. People gathered round him. "What happened?" he asked. "How could this befall her? Why was I not here to save her? How did she fall? How?" No one answered. Nothing was said. I looked around me at the faces on the deck, but no one would meet my eyes. All looked away or cast their eyes down. It was then that I knew what they all knew. Tom, what they would not speak if a savage stood over them with his hatchet at ready. What happened this day did not please God at all. Dorothy Bradford had jumped from the ship into the water. She had taken her own life. Afterward, when all dispersed, I heard Dottie saying to Lester, "I told you she was a daft." He said it loud enough so I could hear. Later that night, my master came and stood before me as I lay in the hammock in the great cabin, writing, "Jasper," he said. I started to get to my feet, as is my custom when speaking to my master, but he motioned me to be still. "You write in this book of yours everything that befalls us," he said. I nodded, "Yes." "I ask you not to write anything you might have on the death of Mistress Bradford, except to say as she fell from the ship. Do you understand, Jasper?" "But, Master," I said. He nodded, "Yes, Jasper." I told him I would fain but put a question to him. He nodded again. "Have we crossed the demon seas?" I asked, "at the risk of life and limb, eating food with maggots in it, worn befouled clothing, and walked on earth never before walked on by Englishmen, to be told that we cannot think or write what we believe?" He sighed and shook his head. and looked at his hat in his hand. So she was so young, he said, only 18. Then he looked at me. Why did I have to have a boy put to me who has the mind of a scholar? He asked, and then he walked away. After much arguing and discussion, I think the elders have finally found a place to make our home. These people do make much discussion of the matter. Of every matter. Some like this land above what they now call Plymouth Harbor, but others feel it is too heavily wooden to be cleared up for houses. I have been allowed to go ashore with those who must learn more. We have found fat soil, goodly groves of trees, fowls in abundance, berries, sorrel, liverwort, yarrow, watercress, leeks, and onions. Tom, if the people in London had what is here, no one would be poor. The ship's carpenter came and said that the gravel and clay were good for building, and there was much fine stone. When it came to make a decision, no one could agree. Elder Bradford said we would call on God for direction. After all, we have put meager food left and all the beer is gone, except that for the captain and the crew. Whatever God said to Elder Bradford, no one knows, but a discussion has been reached. We shall make our home above the harbor. Much of the ground was grown before in corn by Indians. There is a hill on which they can make a fort. Captain Standish wishes to place a cannon there as soon as we can. There are sweet streams for water and fish. The harbor will welcome shallops and small boats. A large rock sits there, which cannot be moved, but mayhaps we can find a use for it. Mary Allerton, wife of a tailor, was brought to the bed of a child, but it was born dead. Richard Brideridge also died. We have started our cemetery before we started our homes. It is on a low hill we have named Burial Hill, just above that big rock. Tomorrow is Christmas, Tom. Do you recall Christmas when Mother was yet alive and we had our homes above the clock shop? When we were but children, was that us, or did I dream it? Here the saints and strangers argue again, this time about Christmas. The strangers and crew wish to celebrate Christmas. The saints say that such an observance, either by forbearing labor, feasting, or any other way, is abhorrent to them. That is part of the Roman corruption, that no one knows when Christ was born, and Christ would not want his birthday celebrated in such a pagan way. I reverence my master, but wonder how he knows what Christ would wish. We all celebrate our birthdays. Cold and gale force winds. All able-bodied men went ashore to fell timber. The common house is to be built on the north bank of the brook, above the beach. The sand was dug. The foundation started this day. I am worn to the bone. Dottie and Lester were set to gathering branches and wood to make cone-shaped shelters for anyone who wishes to stay ashore. My master set me to working with them. They are strong and vigorous. We worked together, but they did not speak except to order me about. I was determined to show them I could pull my own weight. On board in the evening, the captain was intent on celebrating Christmas. He is Church of England. He has broken open a barrel of the ship's beer and invited all to partake there. The saints declined. I did not. I am no saint, nor I have the desire to be one. For 2 days there was no going ashore to work. A fearful wind and storm came upon us, snow and sleet and rain. But today we did get back to work. The elders took measurements for the main street in our village. It is to go up the hill to the fort. They speak of building 19 houses. Unmarried men will be put with their families. The ship is a mile and a half away from shore, and everything we bring from it must be dragged up the hill. Many grumble. Daggery Priest died this day. He was a hatter, Tom. Betimes, in the middle of my work, I look around me into the woods that stretch on, so bleak, into nothing, and at the emptiness of the shore, where the water is turning up waves, and I cannot think. But what are we about here? Today, as at Daggery Priest's burial, I thought, why for Do we need a ladder? Will this land ever support us so that people can have shops? I think not, Tom. We work on the common house. It is to be of wattle and daub construction, with a thatched roof. All work on it, even the women, who carry things or help their husbands by handing them tools. Others watch children so mothers can work. They have a plan for the first house. I have seen it. It will be of a wood frame house with a stone foundation. We carry stones that we hunt in the woods and fields. I am helping to mix the clay that seals the seams. All the while we work, we see the smoke from a distant fires, and we know the savages are watching us. Will they burn what we build? Captain Standish took some men and went to find the savages. Mayhap, he said, we could meet with them, but they could not be found. Standish and his men returned with an eagle they had shot, and the woman cooked it over the fire. It had a wonderful taste. I could not believe I was eating something that was not fish or salted meat. Captain Jones said we should fish for our supper, but we are sick to the death of fish.